The winter holidays in our society seem to be so much more about the stuff we can get good deals on than about celebrating the miracles of the season. The birth of a savior, the dedication of a temple with a day's worth of oil that lasts for 8 days. African-American culture and ideals, the return of the light after the longest night. We are also, dear ones, in a season of intense emotion as we watch the president-elect fill top-level decision-maker positions with people intent on dismantling our networks of care. And as we anticipate mass deportations, the erasure of our trans and gender expansive siblings, and the persecution of anyone who resists. It feels to me like a big piece of my life's journey has been to make me ready for this. The person I used to be half a lifetime ago would have dived into the hurrying and the doing, using it to avoid feeling those intense emotions. This is how we dealt with things in my family of origin, and I learned early and well how to put hard things into a box over there, close it up. Once that's done, it's easy to enjoy the lights and the music and the shopping and the parties. The person I used to be also had panic attacks. Times when I was flooded by intense physical sensations that overwhelmed me, seemingly out of nowhere. I went through a period of heart monitors and frequent doctor visits and anti-anxiety medications, and I stayed busy and numb to my feelings until I acted out in a way that was harmful to someone I loved, and he called me on it. And he made working on it a condition of continuing our relationship. I look back now. It's clear to me that those attacks were nothing more than the hard stuff trying to get out of the box. And it's taken half a lifetime of therapy and spiritual direction to peek into the box and eventually open it up wide. I don't have panic attacks anymore. And of course, it's not that simple. It's never that simple. But this morning, I offer you a place we might start. Susan Podobradsky shared with me a review of a book by Frank Ostasetsky, a Buddhist teacher who works in the movement to improve end-of-life care. The book is called The Five Invitations, and the reviewer is Susan Galati, a member of the board of Patient Choices Vermont, which advocates for terminal patients to have end-of-life options. She writes, Ostasetsky shows us that death happens within a web of relationships and that we need to be present in those relationships with our heart. He offers five invitations, things we can do to bring meaning to each day and thus to the entirety of our life. Because thinking about death often triggers fear or pain, and these are things I feel when I think about the time ahead of us. I perceive these invitations more broadly, and I think they can be useful as we move forward. I'm going to share the invitations one by one as Susan Galati summarizes them with a brief reflection on each. She writes, the first invitation is don't wait. Don't wait to begin living each moment in a manner that is deeply engaged. We must stop wasting our lives on meaningless activities. We must focus on the present and be grateful for what we have now. This speaks to me of the condition of hurrying and doing that I started us off with. If we take the time to slow down enough to engage with our experiences, like Tisha did, we might start noticing more than the urge to hurry and do, and we might appreciate what we notice. And if the present is difficult or painful, I've learned that staying with the hard feelings, really being present to them, hard as it is, has given me the capacity to feel joy when it presents itself. If I can open my heart to hard things, then it's open when the wonderful things happen. And if the wonderful things bring joy, even better. Gilati writes, the second invitation is to welcome everything and push away nothing. We must let go of our opposition to the experiences we are trying to avoid, thoughts, feelings, and events included. If we don't let go of them, they will continue to consume us. Pain, Oscar Setsky writes, is inevitable. Suffering is optional. For me, this means that how I deal with pain matters, that it's important to keep breathing and taking care of myself when I experience it. I have experienced a bit of pain this past year, physical pain as well as grief from the losses of several members of my family, not to mention learning to live alone after dropping my only kid off for college. Giving myself time and space to sit with that grief has impacted my ability to be fully present and engaged in my role as your minister. And I'm sure at least some of you who are here for longer than a visit or several visits might have noticed that. I am relying more on my written manuscripts when I preach, and I'm not always fulfilling my commitment to lead with vulnerability. But I'm also noticing that my resolve to resist what's coming down the road in our nation strengthens as my grief extends to thinking about it. And I'm noticing a widening in my capacity to journey with others through their pain and their grief, even as I sit with my own. Gilati writes, the third invitation is to bring our whole self to the experience. Oscar Setsky writes, we all like to look good. We long to be seen as capable, strong, intelligent, sensitive, spiritual, or at least well-adjusted. Few of us want to be known for our helplessness, fear, anger, or ignorance. Yet more than once, I have found an undesirable aspect of myself, one about which I previously had felt ashamed and kept tucked away, to be the very quality that allowed me to meet another person's suffering with compassion instead of fear or pity. This is where I started to go with the second invitation. Staying with someone when they're struggling, being able to help them, being present to another person fully, I have to be resourced to do that, to know what to look and listen for, to know how I might journey with them. My own experience of journeying through pain or sadness of fear and of being accompanied through it by others can help me do that. The Quaker author and activist Parker Palmer wrote about this as he described his experience of deep depression in his book, Let Your Life Speak. He wrote, the human soul doesn't want to be advised or fixed or saved. It simply wants to be witnessed, to be seen, heard, and companioned exactly as it is. When we make that kind of deep bow to the soul of a suffering person, our respect reinforces the soul's healing resources, the only resources that can help the sufferer make it through. He continues, during my depression, there was one friend who truly helped. With my permission, Bill came to my house every day around 4 p.m., sat me down in an easy chair, and massaged my feet. He rarely said a word, but somehow he found the one place in my body where I could feel a sense of connection with another person, relieving my awful sense of isolation while bearing silent witness to my condition. By offering me this quiet companionship for a couple of months, day in and day out, Bill helped save my life. Unafraid to accompany me in my suffering, he made me less afraid of myself. He was present, simply and fully present, in the same way one needs to be at the bedside of a dying person. If we are to witness the human soul, we must be honest with ourselves and each other about where we're at. This requires knowing where we're at, opening that box. That requires presence. We can only make that deep bow to the pain of another if we acknowledge and accept our own. Gulati writes, "The fourth invitation is to find a place to rest in the middle of things. This place of rest is always available to us. It is where we can begin to say no instead of feeling obliged to say yes. We ought to be able to find this place of rest before we die. Idleness is not an indulgence or a vice so much as it is indispensable." Ostasevsky reminds us that nearly all plants go dormant in winter. Certain mammals hibernate. All are guided by inner clocks to emerge again in the fullness of time, when conditions are right. We need to do this because, he writes, quoting the late Angelus Arian, "there are two things we can never do in the fast lane. We can never deepen nor experience. We can never deepen our experience nor integrate it." That speaks to me this season. What if we responded to this dark and cold time of year with our senses, as John O'Donohue invites so beautifully? What if we let its quiet calm surround us, comfort and caress us when our hearts with sorrow cry? Gulati writes, "The fifth invitation is to cultivate don't know mind. We can get fixated on a certain destination, or we can walk on a path and not especially know where it is going. When we slow down enough to listen carefully, we can sense what is needed without relying solely on rational processes. Not knowing leaves room for wisdom to arise and for the situation itself to inform us." For me, this is the hardest part. I want to think through things and make a plan. It's why I'm relying more on written manuscripts than trust the spirit will guide me to speak as I work to remain present to and process my grief. Pain and fear disorients me, makes me forget the connections between us and that which holds us all. It erodes my trust in the universe. When I'm disoriented, I want a map. I want to know what's next. That brings us to our second wisdom reading.
This piece is from Mary Oliver, the American poet whose work focused on her observations of the natural world. "Did you too see it? Drifting all night on the Black River? Did you see it in the morning, rising into the silvery air? An armful of white blossoms, a perfect commotion of silk and linen as it leaned into the bondage of its wings. A snowbank, a bank of lilies, biting the air with its black beak. Did you hear it? Fluting and whistling, a shrill, dark music like the rain pelting the trees, like a waterfall knifing down the black edges. And did you see it finally just under the clouds, a white cross streaming across the sky, its feet like black leaves, its wings like the stretching light of the river? And did you feel it in your heart, how it pertained to everything? And have you too finally figured out what beauty is for? And have you changed your life?"
If I am to trust that wisdom will arise, that I can move without a map, that spirit will guide me, I need to at least know there is some movement, that the hard things I'm being present to will eventually ease. This poem offers me that possibility. There's all this movement in it, drifting, rising, biting, fluting, whistling, streaming, stretching, words that also describe how change feels. And there's an invitation to notice that moment, to be present to what it arouses in us. Did you feel it in your heart, how it pertained to everything? And then she calls us to move beyond simply paying attention to how we feel, to letting it change us. And have you too finally figured out what beauty is for? And have you changed your life? What I hear in this is that being in the present moment, aware of what is within us, between us, and around us, is not the opposite to changing or working toward making change. As the writer, poet, activist, and mom Nadia Colburn writes on her blog, change is always happening from the present moment. We cannot be anywhere other than right where we are. And since time is always about moving, and nothing, in fact, is ever static, the present moment is always about to change. So we can be right here, fully present, and also preparing for the kind of change that we want, pointing our feet in the right direction. And to listen to Mary Oliver, the right direction is following the beauty and the joy. Keeping our hearts open to those things and to everything, by keeping us focused on both the present moment and the reality that it will change. It can change our lives. Some of that change happens around us, and we can only control how we respond to it. And some of that change happens within us as we learn to feel and grow in our response. Change is inevitable. Sometimes change feels good. Sometimes it causes fear, or sadness, or pain. As change happens around us these next months, may we stay present with what it brings, so that we might offer witness and compassion, find wholeness, and keep working together for peace and justice, knowing we are all here. May it be so, and may we be so.